Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you're having a spectacular day. Having a spectacular day is a choice. We can look out the window, or we can look around us, or even inside of ourselves, and we can feel blue and miserable and terrible, or we can choose to see the world and ourselves differently. Without hope, it's hopeless. And the most important person that will ever give you hope is yourself. So many people have overcome so many things. When we talk about addiction, it's not so much about having to overcome something, but choosing love instead of the thing that you think is replacing that emptiness inside of you, or that feeling inside of you that something is missing. Today I'm going to have a guest on that has meant a lot to me, and I don't want to tell you too much about him, but he is a vet, and I have a special place in my heart for veterans. Being a military brat myself, my stepfather was in the Air Force, and we traveled a lot. I had the typical dysfunctional childhood from the military lifestyle of constantly moving and never going to the same school twice, and the stress that my stepfather had because of his career, especially when we were living in Arctic weather and he was shoveling snow to get the car out to go to work and things like that. But nevertheless, military life has many advantages, but people who go to war and who serve in difficult situations often have post-traumatic stress. I know my stepfather definitely had it. He had nightmares every night, and often the family would be awakened with him screaming or yelling. He was on the battlefront. He served in New Guinea and Guam, and he definitely was traumatized by the war, and his way of coping with that was to drink. And, of course, that never makes anything better. It only makes things worse. But, unfortunately, so many vets have become addicted to substances. Sometimes they were given them in the military to help them to manage their anxiety or their physical pain. Often vets are given narcotics for that reason. And they become addicted. No one's doing it on purpose. No one says, gee, I hope I get addicted to this. But substances like alcohol and narcotics are highly addictive drugs. And so it's only normal and natural that someone who is being given regular amounts of narcotics or alcohol is, and they're traumatized, they have a very high likelihood of becoming dependent or addicted on those substances. So my guest will share about that. And also, he has managed to overcome those issues. We're not going to give his last name because it is important that people be able to come on this show and talk about whatever they want to talk about in safety and trust. And confidentiality is important. And so it really serves no purpose for putting people on the air who are in recovery and they tell their last name or where they served and things like that. I don't mind doing it because that's my mission and purpose. And I've written a book, Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution, which you can find on Simon Schuster, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or even on my website. And I would love for you to purchase it because it is how I got out of addiction myself. And I've helped thousands of other people to recover from addiction as well. Addiction really is not that hard to stop once you decide to do it and you follow certain steps. The people that don't succeed kind of want to do it their own way, and that just tells me usually when I'm working with someone that they're just not ready. And everybody needs to follow their own path in their own way and own time. No judgment about that. But those people who have recovered and have successfully recovered for a long, long time are generally doing well. And even though some people relapse, like I did at one point, it's not the end of the world. It's a normal part of the learning process. And we just learn from that experience and grow from it and dig a little deeper. And most of us will succeed if we persist. Breaking patterns of behavior sometimes takes practice. It's not just self-will and mindset. And it also takes a willingness to follow a path. It takes a willingness to be open to change and to following guidance and support and getting out of our comfort zone. Growing and stretching is about getting out of our comfort zone, because our comfort zone is often what will kill us. So I'm very happy to tell you that our guest is here, and he's going to share with us. And we're just going to do like I always do, just talk, you know, just organic. I never rehearse the conversation with anybody other than, is there something you don't want to cover? Because I want you to hear for the first time the conversation. Rehearsed and staged and planned conversations are never the best. So, please welcome my guest, Taylor. Taylor, are you there?
Hi, good afternoon, everybody.
Hi, how are you today?
Wonderful, wonderful. How are things for you?
Very well, thank you. I was just talking about what a wonderful day it is, no matter what's going on the inside or outside. I've learned to be grateful for whatever is.
Absolutely, absolutely. I heard a guy tell me one day in the auto zone, I had mistakenly heard what he said, but I asked him how he's doing, and I thought he said, I'm feeling powerful. And I took a double tap at him, and I was like, did you just say I'm feeling powerful? I've never heard that one before, but I loved it. And what he said was, I was feeling wonderful, but interesting.
Well, you know, they are the same in many ways. When we choose to feel wonderful no matter what's going on, then we are being powerful. So I told the guest before you came on that you are a vet, and I understand you don't want to share where you were deployed, and that is fine. But I do wonder if you would be willing to share with us how being a vet and being in recovery. Can you share something about that with our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a long track of veterans that develop, you know, issues and stuff like that. We have a lot that we are we're trained on, and there's a thing called the warrior ethos that are drilled into us whenever we first get in. And one of those is to never surrender. And that was kind of one of my biggest hurdles in the beginning of this whole journey. But, you know, there's also a huge stigma in the military, especially for the users, and wanting to self-identify to their command chain and stuff like that because of the trust issues, I think, that are pretty prevalent in some of the smaller units and everything. And so there's like this negative stigma that is felt on the person that is having some trouble self-identifying before they actually come into some real consequences with the military.
Okay, so just for the lay people like me, although I don't know if you heard before, but I was raised in the military, so I do understand a lot of it. And I certainly understand post-traumatic stress syndrome, but what do you mean by the user? What does that mean?
By the person that's having some issues with substances or alcohol or anything.
Okay, good, good. And then and self-identify, meaning coming clean with the troops about that, or the supervisor, or what do you mean about that?
Right. So we have kind of an amnesty period for people that have consumed any kind of drugs or if somebody's having some serious issues with alcohol, which I think, you know, a lot of us can understand that, you know, I was the last person to get notified of my issue, but self-identify.
You were notified
is,
of your issue.
Self-identify is what you can do prior to a drug test or prior to knowing that you have to take
a drug
test.
Prior to being notified.
Yeah, you get notified. And if you come to the command chain and you tell them, hey, I was out, you know, with my girl, or I was out at a party, I was at a friend's house, and, you know, they were smoking some weed or something like that, and I partook, I'm letting you know that I did that. Well, there's a heavy, heavy fear of reprisal that would come after that. And I didn't self-identify, right? What happened was I completely disappeared. I was in treatment, and my unit sent people after me to come round me up and figure out what was going on, and I was about to be in big trouble until they found out that I was in treatment.
Can you hear me?
Kind of.
Oh, were you AWOL? Were you considered AWOL?
They were considering me AWOL until they found out where I was. And
okay.
Then after they found out where I was, my unit found out where I was, the whole situation changed. And they were actually extremely supportive and helped me along, and they were helping me out. But it kind of hammered home the importance of being able to self-identify. And,
yes.
And the issues in the military with soldiers being able to, be okay with self-identifying.
Yes. Like, that's a healthy thing to do, and to encourage it rather than making it scary. Well, can you tell me why you, were you suffering some post-traumatic stress, or what was going on when?
Yes. So I definitely was, suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, syndrome. And I am currently 100% disabled for that specifically, for PTSD specifically. It was pretty debilitating, but I think it was kind of a mixture. It was a mixed bag of, you know, some genetics. It was a mixed bag of environment. It was a mixed bag of childhood. It was a mixed bag of
the
disturbance.
The perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect storm.
It really was. And it was my own perfect storm. There's plenty of other people out there that probably could have withstood, or been able to find a different route than I did. And that's why I call it, you know, that was my perfect storm. That was what was set up for me, but it got me here today.
Yes. So could you describe, and congratulations for that. How long has it been that you've been?
I will have 3 years at August 31st.
That, you know, that is such a miracle for someone who can't pull together 3 hours or 3 days. And I have had the honor of seeing and knowing of vets, or even family members of vets, who cannot do that and don't know how to do it, or just aren't ready to face it for whatever reason. Can you describe your PTSD symptoms?
Yeah. So I would have to say hypervigilance was one of them. It was high-functioning anxiety. I had severe insomnia. I had aggression. I had some sense of paranoia. I had flashbacks, and I had dreams. And a lot of times the dreams weren't necessarily from the deployments, but they were firefights in general. And there was really a huge disconnect in my actual thinking process of the world around me. And I often, you know, felt like it was, you know, anything that I did was never good enough, which settled in a large portion of depression. And so it was yet another, you know, mixed bag of tricks that I was trying to personally deal with, because, you know, as a man and as a soldier, I didn't want to, and I didn't know how to elaborate what was going on with me. Like, I just had no idea, and the only thing I could do with what I was feeling was to drink it away.
So did you, feel yourself decompensating, or you knew something wasn't right, or you just couldn't function the way you wanted to function?
I knew that I didn't want to be angry anymore, and I knew that I wanted to find some sort of peace. And there was nothing, there was absolutely nothing that I could do, to find it anywhere. And I would look everywhere for it, and I could not find any peace of mind, any peace of soul, and until I found, you know, my sobriety. And then I learned that my peace comes from within myself. And, you know, that's kind of, that really kick-drived.
That's that
my
powerful
my
feeling.
Sobriety.
Yeah, the powerful rather than powerless feeling that you get from recovery.
Absolutely.
So you were having difficulty sleeping, emotionally regulating yourself.
Yes, I was on 12 different medications at one time.
What were you on?
Oh Lord, I can't even remember. I think I was on like 3 different sleep meds. I was on anxiety meds. I was on depression meds. It really felt like the hospital that I was going to, it really felt like when I would go to see mental health at the VA, they would just reach down into the bottom drawer and grab a handful of whatever pills, chunk them at you, and see what might work. There was really no trying to get to the root of things. There was really no trying to figure out what the core issues were. It was, hey, you've got PTSD, take this medication and see you later. But once I started...
Well, that is really shocking.
Yeah, and it may be different today, but
that's not what I'm hearing from people that are coming in.
I don't trust the VA mental health system. I pay out of pocket for therapy myself to help me with a lot of stuff, and you know, I don't think I would have done that had I not done what I did almost 3 years ago and got sober. Because I did have a huge epiphany that I was doing everything backwards. I was trying to get therapy done while still drinking, and once I had a few days separation from the drinking, I kind of had this epiphany, like, I've been doing this backwards this whole time. I needed to quit drinking in order for the therapy to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And
or any kind of help to work.
And, but with the medication, you know, I think I was about 3 months sober, and I started to kind of wean myself off of it, everything. And then I found, you know, meditation practices and stuff like that. And today, actually it was about 6 months, 6 to 7 months after after I got sober, I was completely, medication free, and my PTSD symptoms are extremely manageable now, and I, you know, have been able to find that peace within myself, and I have done some pretty amazing things since then, and I, you know, life is wonderful.
I want to hear more about that when we come back from the break, but that is absolutely amazing what you just said, and it's something that I drill down on all the time, because we have become a pill taking society, and I took them myself, I was prescribed them myself, and I know that I was never ever helped by any of those medications. They either blunted me emotionally, or they made my emotions worse, not better. And same thing with drinking. It may give you a reprieve when you're numbed out, but there you are, and it's like putting out a fire with gasoline. It just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And so did anyone ask you when they were prescribing you medication if you drank?
Yeah, I was still drinking.
Did they ask you if you were drinking?
Yeah, but I lied.
Oh, you lied. Okay.
I didn't want to tell them. I didn't want to tell them that I had a problem drinking, and I didn't want to tell anybody that I had a problem drinking. I was a highly functioning alcoholic. I was the lead avionics technician for my state. I was the highest ranking avionics technician in my state. And, I worked on helicopters, and I worked on airplanes, and, I would basically try to mitigate the effects of the alcohol the next day by drinking copious amounts of coffee. And I would get all wired up on that, and I would just go until after work, and I would stop and get some beer or something, and then I would stop and pick my kids up from daycare, and then I would continue to drink for the rest of the evening, and that was kind of just what I did.
So the wheels kept turning round and round.
Exactly. The wheels kept on turning until the wheels fell off. And once wheels fell off, I got time to sit still long enough to really start taking a look at things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long did that go on before the wheels started coming off?
Honestly, I was about 11 years old when it all began, and it was just one thing after another, and it finally all came to a screeching halt at around 34 years old, so
mm-hmm.
20 plus years.
Mm. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to hear more about that. This is a really powerful story, and I want to get it out there to as many vets as possible, because it's not only an incredible story in terms of what you've been through, but it's such a powerful message of hope. Like, if you can do it, they can do it. We can all do
it. Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Dr. Donna Marks. This is Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution, and we will return shortly. Thank you.
Join our movement by becoming a member of the Exit the Maze Alliance. Your membership will provide the extra help needed to restore your mental health and the joyous life you were meant to have. You'll even have access to a live monthly webinar with Dr. Donna Marks, free meditations, access to her blogs, and other special perks not available elsewhere. For only $12 a month, you can be part of the exclusive Exit the Maze Alliance. Sign up now at drdonnamarks.com. There's no better time to get your life back than right now.
It's frustrating staying in the same pattern, doing the same thing over and over and over again, and still getting the same results. Well, how would you like to break that pattern, change that mindset with just a 3-step process? Imagine turning reactions into healing actions and mistakes into blessings. Well, now you can with Dr. Donna Mark's book, Learn, Grow, Forgive. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or anywhere fine books are sold. That's Learn, Grow, Forgive by Dr. Donna Marks. You'll be glad you did.
Flip your switch to the healing moment, and you'll turn your messes into miracles. Dr. Donna Marks combines her expertise in psychology and spirit in her new book, The Healing Moment, to provide you a valuable, easy-to-use toolkit for a better life. With her book, The Healing Moment, you'll discover how to change your fear to love and finally be able to take control over your life. Get closer to your healing moment by purchasing Dr. Donna Marks' book, The Healing Moment, at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and find bookstores everywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Dr. Donna Marks, and we are having a very special guest on our Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution show. Please feel free to visit healthylife.net if you want to listen to the show again. Our guest today is Taylor, and Taylor is a vet, and he suffered PTSD and depression and anxiety. He was sharing with us a lot of different things going on there, including what we were talking about. It was like a perfect storm between the mixture of genes, childhood stuff, and trauma. So Taylor was in the military, and he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and he now has shared with us that he's got 3 years of sobriety, and he's doing great, and you could just hear it. You could just hear the powerfulness and the positivity and the hope and the message and the mission and the purpose. And Taylor, you're still pretty young. This is awesome.
Yep, I'm 37 years young, and, you know, well on my way to thriving instead of surviving.
That's the name of the game. So you were talking a little bit about when you said started when you were 8 or 9 years old, or what happened?
When I was 11, I think, was when I was really first introduced to drugs and to alcohol, and you know, from that point on, it was really kind of
how were you introduced?
It was my oldest sister. She, you know, I was over there hanging out, and, you know, at a young age, my father had gone to prison, and my mother was working several jobs, and so I was kind of, you know, left to my own devices. And so I'd often find myself trekking, you know, several miles over to my sister's house, which she herself had, you know, issues with drug use, and she didn't really drink too much, but she did do a lot of drugs. I remember that. And I know that when I got, I think I was like 12 or 13 when she looked at me and she said, "Taylor, if you're ever going to do any kind of drugs, you come over here and you do them with me so I can keep an eye on you." And yeah. I thought back then that was just like the greatest thing ever. I was like, "Mom," you know, I looked at her like a caregiver and not realizing what was going on. And so my drug use, and my alcohol consumption was facilitated, you know, by someone older. If I needed somebody to get me alcohol, I had my oldest sister. If I had somebody that I needed to run something by, whether it be a new drug or whether it be, you know, some mushrooms that I picked or something like that, then I could run it by her. And, you know, everything was facilitated, and it was, everything was fine. You know, I had 12, 13, 14 years old, I was already, you know, selling drugs. Me and my friends were, you know, running drugs around town and stuff like that. We'd be showing up on my buddy's mongoose bike. And, you know, that went on for a while.
Wow, that's really young to be exposing your brain to so much.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, the lack of education there was just, I had no idea, no guidance, no nothing, and so I just kind of was falling into that machine of society where our kids are left alone. And I think, you know, generationally that has kind of been left behind us, that whole, you know, go outside and play, that whole don't come back till the lights come on, so the street lights come on kind of mentality has kind of gone away, and our children these days are more at home, and parents are a lot more involved, I do believe.
There's two sides to that story. I mean, when kids used to be outside playing until dark, and they were in community, and they were playing with neighborhood children, and they were going from, you know, backyard to backyard or park to park, and it was safe, that was one thing.
Right.
Now, yes, children are more at home, but they're also got the challenges of the social media, mean girls and boys, and being addicted to video games and not being out in the fresh air and sunshine. So it's a whole new set of challenges, but often creating the same exact results of too much time alone, too much alienation, too much isolation, And we have to balance all that out. But anyhow, go ahead with what you were saying. It's very important.
Yeah, it definitely has created kind of a cascading process addiction thing going on. And I know that my kids up in Arkansas with their mom suffer from some symptoms of process addiction as well, because, you know, they're not going out, but they're staying in, and they're bored. And but I'll digress back to when I was 16, I had this revelation in my head that I have got to stop doing all this stuff that I'm doing, and I've got to get on a better track. Otherwise, I'm going to die, or I'm going to end up in prison. And I wasn't going to end up in prison like my dad, and I wasn't ready to die yet. So at 16 years old, I kicked a three-year cocaine habit, stopped smoking weed, stopped my drinking, stopped the drinking long enough to get into a youth program to get my GED, and then I joined the Army at 17 with a parental waiver.
And you did that on your own initiative? No one told you? Or?
It was a voluntary program. However, I did realize that what I was doing, so it was kind of both. I was being told, you can't do this anymore. And then I was like, yeah, you're right. I really can't, or I'm going to end up dead, or I'm going to end up in prison, because I had a couple of friends that already caught gun charges and everything, and it was getting pretty heavy.
So you were to get too far into the dark side there.
Right, yes. And, you know, I tried to get back into it a little bit after I got home from Iraq, and there was some instances where, you know, some things happened, and by, you know, divine intervention, they did not. So, you know, I just kind of carried on. I finally landed a job and as an avionics technician, and just kind of was highly functioning after that with alcohol, trying to stay within the confines of what was acceptable as far as what we could use in the military versus what we can't use. And so I just overindulged for many, many, many years in alcohol, and it is alcohol is kind of a double-edged sword in the military. It's used as a, you know, cohesiveness. It's used to celebrate, and it's used for in all kinds of different occasions.
A reinforcer in certain situations.
It's a reinforcer, right. However, I never got the memo that a lot of people can have two or three, and I couldn't. So that became an issue.
How did you know? What did that show up like that you couldn't have one or two?
We'd be out in the field, or well, I say on the field, we'd be on annual training, and we would, you know, I would not show up for my duty the next morning because I drank too much and I overslept. And so I started getting in trouble, and that's kind of when it started gaining traction. I started having, you know, first sergeants and mentors and stuff like that be like, hey, you should probably put the sauce down. Probably shouldn't be doing that. And I'm like, oh, no, it's okay. And just really not knowing a whole lot about what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to see when the clouds are too thick.
Right. Absolutely. You know, so, but all that led to the point, you know, almost 3 years ago where I had to completely just let go of everything, and I had to figure out how to surrender, and I had to figure out how to start loving myself enough to want to be better. And that's kind of what I correlated to when somebody says you can only get sober for yourself. It's absolutely true. You got to learn to love yourself again.
And on that note, we are going to take a break, because when we come back, we're going to hear more about that, because that is the key, self-love. You're listening to Dr. Donna Marks with her guest, Taylor, And this is Exit the Maze, one addiction, one cause, one solution. We will return shortly.
It's frustrating staying in the same pattern, doing the same thing over and over and over again and still getting the same results. Well, how would you like to break that pattern, change that mindset with just a three-step process? Imagine turning reactions into healing actions and mistakes into blessings. Well, now you can with Dr. Donna Mark's book, Learn, Grow, Forgive. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or anywhere fine books are sold. That's Learn, Grow, Forgive by Dr. Donna Marks. You'll be glad you did.
Join our movement by becoming a member of the Exit the Maze Alliance. Your membership will provide the extra help needed to restore your mental health and the joyous life you were meant to have. You'll even have access to a live monthly webinar with Dr. Donna Marks, free meditations, access to her blogs, and other special perks not available elsewhere. For only $12 a month, you can be part of the exclusive Exit the Maze Alliance. Sign up now at drdonnamarks.com. There's no better time to get your life back than right now.
Here's a fact I bet you didn't know. There's only one addiction. It just has many faces. But in spite of the many treatments, of the many kinds of addictions, something's not working. Addiction is only increasing. Dr. Marks says every addiction is a substitute for love, and until you learn how to replace addiction with self-love, you'll remain addicted. Now you can overcome addiction with self-love and get rid of it for good with Exit the Maze, a book by Dr. Donna Marks. Your first step towards true recovery. Buy Exit the Maze at Amazon.com. BarnesandNoble.com, and find bookstores everywhere.
Flip your switch to the healing moment and you'll turn your messes into miracles. Dr. Donna Marks combines her expertise in psychology and spirit in her new book, The Healing Moment, to provide you a valuable, easy-to-use toolkit for a better life. With her book, The Healing Moment, you'll discover how to change your fear to love and finally be able to take control over your life. Get closer to your healing moment by purchasing Dr. Donna Marks' book, The Healing Moment, at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and find bookstores everywhere.
You are listening to Exit the Maze with Dr. Donna Marks, and we are so happy to have you back. We are talking with Taylor, who is in recovery from substance abuse and addiction, and who is a vet. And during the break, Taylor, you were sharing some of the part of your history with us, which if you want to share it, you're welcome to. I think it could really help people, because a lot of people do go into the military to get themselves straightened out. It's like an intervention. And it works in a lot of ways. You know, it provides structure and discipline and certainly gets you and a state of mind where you can overcome a lot of things. But before you got there, you were really on the dark side. Do you want to share any of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I could go back to my teenage days and prior to enlisting in the military. And, you know, I was living with my older sister, and she was a drug addict, as was I back then. And, you know, she had this guy, and she would he would come over on the weekends, and he was a big cocaine dealer, and he would come, he'd throw a couple of eight balls on the table for me, and they would go in the back bedroom, and I wouldn't see them for the rest of the weekend. But what I found out was that they were in there using syringes, and they were slamming it. And so I was just kind of left alone, you know, again. But now I've got drugs, and I've got cable TV, and you know, that was kind of a big part of my life back then. And I stayed in this little shack that was off from the house, and that's where I stayed. And, you know, if I wanted some whiskey, I would get some whiskey, but she would give me some whiskey. But it was all,
she knew how to keep you sedated.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. And then, you know, she tried to teach me how to slam it, and I at that point, I think, when I saw her, you know, mixing up the the water and the cotton and the Coke and the spoon. And then when she stuck it in her arm, I kind of, there was like a disconnect. I was like, that's not, I don't want that.
That's,
I don't want that.
Mine, yeah.
And so that's kind of when that divine intervention, that epiphany happened. Like, if I keep going, I'm gonna get deep and heavy into this, you know, deeper and heavier into the activities that I was being a part of. And I decided I gotta change. I gotta do something. I gotta get out of here. And so, that was my main mission at that point in time. I was like, I've got to get away. I've got to get out of here. I've got to get distance from all of this. And so that's when I went into a youth challenge program, which was a military-based program for troubled youth. And so they were more than happy to take me. But it took a little convincing because I was turning 17 while still in the program, but just barely. So, but they allowed me to participate in the program. I was recruited to the Army out of that program, and I had a recruiter. And you know, at first I was using the recruiter. I was like, he'll get me out of here for a little while. He'll take me out, get some dinner somewhere, and everything. And so that happened, and then we sat down in the kitchen at my mom's house with a waiver, you know, a parental waiver to sign her son over to the U.S. military, and she did. And so away I went.
Is that what you wanted? Is that what you wanted?
That is 100% what I wanted.
Okay.
I didn't want to come back.
Okay.
I didn't want to go back home. I didn't want to fall back into the wheel, the machine again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was gone, you know, and in total I was gone about 4 years. And when I got back, I was like 20 years old, and some debauchery ensued. I was drinking and a lot of run-ins with the cops, a lot of fighting. You know, like they started looking, you know, the cops started looking for me and looking for our group, because I fell right back into the same group that I left 4 years prior to that. And we were just older. That's the only thing that changed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and my mom had gotten in with this man who had his hand in a lot of different things. And I had spoke earlier about divine intervention, and this was very prevalent in this certain situation where I was propositioned to kill somebody, and I was being used because of my anger and because of my time in Iraq. And I guess he
thought
I would
be the perfect
scapegoat.
You had a certain skill set that was desirable for this type of profession?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so I was either the cat's paw or I was the scapegoat. But luckily, you know, me and again, alcohol was involved, and me and my buddy, we jumped in my mom's car because we were going to take her car to go do this. And on the way there, the car flipped for no reason. And my buddy tried to say he saw a raccoon cross the road, but this was a road that we were very familiar with. We had walked it, we had biked it, we had ran it, we had driven it, you know, almost our whole lives, and just all of a sudden the car flipped three times and, you know, quite literally saved my life.
Amazing. So you don't know why it flipped, it just did.
I don't know why it flipped even to this day.
He's swerved in us a raccoon or something, whatever. But your perception is different, and consequently you did not succeed at the mission that you were out on, thank goodness.
Right. Yeah.
You wouldn't
and,
be here right now.
And you know, I held on to that resentment for a long time with that man. And he never would admit it until one day He finally did, and he admitted that.
What did you want him to admit?
That he set that he propositioned me for that, and there were several outside private conversations.
Was wrong of him to do that.
Hmm.
And you wanted to hear that was wrong of him to do that.
Yeah, I think I did.
Of course.
You know, I recently did a quantum change process that allowed me to release a lot of those resentments. And, he was one of the big ones that I needed to let go of the hate, let go of the resentment, let go of all of it, and just mm-hmm. come to find some compassion for the man and mm-hmm. some understanding for, he's just
that he was so far
doing what he was raised and was taught how to do.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Good for you. And that's the only way out of that maze with people who put us in harm's way when we're too young to really define those boundaries for ourselves because we never had them, is to forgive. So good for you that you were able to reach that level. And well, boy, what a thank you for the divine intervention, because you would
Absolutely.
Not be where you are right now without it. We are going
exactly.
to take another quick break, and when we return, I want to hear all about what happened after that, and I know you're doing some very exciting things right now in your life. I want to hear about those, too. You're such an inspiration. This is Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution. We will be right back. Thank you.
Here's a fact I bet you didn't know. There's only one addiction. It just has many faces. But in spite of the many treatments, of the many kinds of addictions, something's not working. Addiction is only increasing. Dr. Marks says every addiction is a substitute for love, and until you learn how to replace addiction with self-love, you'll remain addicted. Now you can overcome addiction with self-love and get rid of it for good with Exit the Maze, a book by Dr. Donna Marks. Your first step towards true recovery. Buy Exit the Maze at Amazon.com. BarnesandNoble.com, and find bookstores everywhere.
Flip your switch to the healing moment, and you'll turn your messes into miracles. Dr. Donna Marks combines her expertise in psychology and spirit in her new book, The Healing Moment, to provide you a valuable, easy-to-use toolkit for a better life. With her book, The Healing Moment, you'll discover how to change your fear to love and finally be able to take control over your life. Get closer to your healing moment by purchasing Dr. Donna Marks' book, The Healing Moment, at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and find bookstores everywhere.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Dr. Donna Marks, and our show is Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution. I would love for you to visit my webpage at www.drdonnamarks.com. You can register and be on my email list so that you're aware of special events and situations that come up. Also, there are over 200 articles on there that are all self-help. And you can have full access to ordering any of my three books that are also available there. We are listening to Taylor. Taylor is a vet and suffered from PTSD, also some childhood trauma, which he was sharing with us, and adult trauma. And right before the break, Taylor, you were telling us about this divine intervention of being on the way for your mother's boyfriend. He had commissioned you to kill someone, and fortunately there was an intervention of an accident that you still don't know what caused it. It doesn't matter. It just happened. Were you injured at all in that accident, by the way?
No, actually, I wasn't. I was in the passenger seat, and we weren't wearing seat belts. But I climbed out of the sunroof at that point because it had busted open, and my friend that was driving broke his foot and had a laceration on his head and a concussion. He ended up getting a trip to the hospital, but I got out and immediately started trying to flip the car back over.
Kind of like the mom who's trying to lift the car off the child, just full of adrenaline and strength, and let's get into the solution here. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I was ready to make mission, and fortunately, like we were talking about, the divine intervention didn't allow that to happen. And, you know, I'm extremely thankful today for that. And there are a multitude of happenings in my life that I'm thankful for today, that I don't think I would have been, that I wasn't grateful for back then, because I couldn't see the benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I can see. And
that's really important for people to hear, that we can't always see the silver lining or the miracle or the healing moment. I talk about my one of my books, you know, the turning a mess into a miracle, which is certainly what you've done. So it's important for people to know that once we get once our brain gets restored to sanity and all the drugs are out of it, prescription and non-prescription, and it's restored to its beautiful, God-given, natural state, we can see things clearly then.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can find a message in any bottle, and we can see the silver lining of any mess. It's, you know, there's a lesson or there's a blessing, as they say.
So
and
tell
both
us what
of those
happened
are
next.
Great things.
After this car incident, what happened? How did you wind up in recovery?
I wound up in recovery because, you know, after so many years of being in addiction, I had become, you know, this walking empty husk of a man. I felt soulless. I felt useless. I felt
a shell
helpless.
Of a person.
I was just a shell of a person, and I had nothing, but at the same time, I had everything that somebody might want. I had a family. I had kids. I had a career. You know, I was, you know, highly decorated in the military. It was all great things, but I couldn't appreciate any of it because I felt so dead inside, and that was a direct result of the addiction. The addiction kept me dead inside.
Yes. And took away a lot of the more meaningful things. Marriages.
Right. You know, I had zero gratitude for anything, and I was always wondering, you know, why me? I was always wondering, why is this happening to me? And I was a victim of my own situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't see it because I was blinded.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I liken it to the movie the Body Snatchers, where this alien force comes in and takes over people, and they don't even mind it. They don't see it. They don't want to see it. They don't mind. They're just gone. And that's what addiction does to us. It mm-hmm. literally hijacks our brain and our mind, and we become zombies to that. And it's just wonderful when, you know, to talk to people like you, Taylor, and my own story, where we don't have to do that. And we don't have to be on a bunch of pills either. We're not saying that people should come off their pills. I'm not a medical doctor, folks. I'm not advocating that. But I love hearing it because I know that I was able to do it, and I'm hearing you were able to do it, and your brain mm-hmm. is fully engaged now. We only have a few minutes left, Taylor. I want you to tell everyone what your life is like now. It's so amazing. I've met your beautiful children. They are so well-adjusted.
Yes.
You are on fire for life, aside from your program
chilled.
And your spirituality. share with the audience what you're up to now.
So, right now, I am in pursuit of my PhD in neuropsychology. I'm looking at wanting to do, some cross studies in neuroscience as well. I am highly regarded in my school. I just recently sat in as a student on an interview board for hiring one of the new psychologists for an adjunct position, and you know, I was invited by a very well known physicist and a very well known mathematician to come in and collaborate on a paper with them, a research opportunity to look into memory formation. You know, I've become president of the psychology club there at the school. I have been tasked by one of my professors who has her own practice. She's a psychotherapist as well, to develop, you know, my own methodology for addiction treatment, and they want me to take that and stand a clinic up there at the school and set something up there at the school. And you know, things are just really amazing. I study heavily in consciousness, and you know, I'm a history buff. I love my ancient history and everything, but you know, I can't really explain it all in the time that we have left, just all the amazing things that are going on. But what I can say today is that, you know, life is based off of my perception. And my perception of my life right now transforms my reality into what I want it. And I can do that today. And I can take that information and I can turn it into something beautiful, positive, and purpose-driven. And that's kind of what happened. Was I got sober. I practiced those tools in sobriety. And what happened was I was able to step into my purpose and start moving towards my potential, my human potential. And I think Maslow said that was part of the self-actualization process.
And such a wonderful thing to witness, and you're just such a natural for it, and it's just a beautiful thing when God allows us to turn whatever our past experiences, no matter what we've done, no matter what we've been through, how all of that can be put into a mix of beauty and mission and purpose and helpfulness to others. It's just such a wonderful thing. And we are so blessed, and I'm so blessed to have had you on the show. You are such an inspiration, and I know you're going to get your doctorate degree, and I know you're going to do great things with it. And I love the way that the university is able to utilize your gifts and your talents just and your enthusiasm. It's so fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Donna. I do appreciate it very much.
Well, we're so happy to have you, and so happy to have you in my life as well.
Absolutely.
Well, that's going to conclude our show for today. Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution. Taylor, thank you so much for appearing today, and this will be on the healthylife.net. Webpage. I sent you the link, and we will be posting it as well on all our social media. Please visit www.drdonnamarks.com for further information, and this concludes our show. You've been listening to Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution. Have a great week.